Welcome to KC Connect, brought to you by IBEX Employer Relations team. Across this series of short episodes, we will provide insight and expertise on some of the most common challenges for our members and discuss the case law shaping the employer relations landscape. My name is Mairead Crosby, Regional Director, IBEX Midwest. I'm joined by my colleague Maureen McHenry, ER Executive in the Midwest. And for the next 10 minutes, we're going to discuss and explore and analyse a recent decision from the WRC where a record amount was awarded to an employee who was dismissed for breaching the employer's bullying harassment policy in allegedly bullying his manager and a colleague. And we're in the adjudicator's decision. It almost reads like a checklist for employers of what not to do in such scenarios and probably serves as a useful reminder and summary for employers faced with rolling out an investigation, whether under their disciplinary or their bullying harassment policy. And I suppose this decision, it's broadly set out under two headings, and we might talk about those for a few minutes, about the substantive fairness, the procedural fairness. So maybe on the substantive side, handing over to you, having had a look at analysing this, what would you conclude from your review?
Yeah, thanks, Mairead. So I suppose, firstly, what do we actually mean by the substantive fairness? And by that, we mean, was the decision to dismiss reasonable in all the circumstances? And it's important to note that any adjudicator's role in hearing a case at third party is it's not to decide the innocence or guilt of the complainant or the employee. It's whether the employer's decision was reasonable in all the circumstances presented to him. And ultimately, in this instance, the adjudicator found that it was not reasonable. And there's a couple of points that we might look at that he referred to, which I think provide really useful learnings for employers. So the first thing he talks about and he spends some time discussing is a letter which was issued to the employee. And at the hearing, the respondent, the employer, sought to label that as a warning to, I suppose, justify the subsequent decision to dismiss. But what he stated about that letter was that it could not be considered a warning because the word warning itself was actually never used in the body of that letter. And crucially, it didn't actually make it clear that the employee's role was in jeopardy. So I suppose the learning from that is that if something purports to be a warning, it should actually, in the first instance, state that it is a warning, whether it's a first or a verbal. And it should also clearly state what consequences will follow from a repetition of the behaviour, whether that's dismissal or broadly, it should just state disciplinary action up to and including dismissal. And the next point that the adjudicator looked at was that that letter also made no reference whatsoever to a breach of the bullying and harassment policy. And it should be borne in mind that that is ultimately the reason or the basis for the employee's dismissal, that he breached the employer's bullying and harassment policy. Yet this letter never referenced that. And another point that the adjudicator referenced was that while the employee had been given a copy of the bullying and harassment policy, it was given to him in 2016. And the incident that formed the subject matter of the dismissal occurred in 2019. And in the intervening 3 years, no training had been provided to him. So just a note there for employers that it's important to provide perhaps refresher training on all policies from time to time. Another point that he referenced, Mairead, was that the inappropriate behaviours or interactions with colleagues, he felt that it fell short of warranting dismissal. And he also stated that the examples given were vague. So I suppose the takeaway from that is it's important that your documents clearly set out the alleged behaviour that's being sanctioned and that the evidence given is clear. The adjudicator also observed, and I think this was an interesting takeaway from it, that the behaviours took place during the Ramadan period. And the employee in this instance was himself a practicing Muslim. And no inquiries were made by the employer as to whether this might have caused him any difficulty. And finally, I think one of the most damning observations by the adjudicator in this instance was that, and I'm quoting here, the failure to contemplate issuing a formal verbal or written warning to the employee at any stage prior to his termination is incomprehensible and notably evident in the disciplinary outcome. And I suppose what he's referencing there is that there was a rush to dismissal. without any previous warnings whatsoever. And indeed, what the employer sought to label as a warning, the adjudicator felt couldn't even be labelled as a warning. So as a result of all of those, the adjudicator found that the dismissal was substantively unfair as well as disproportionate, and that no reasonable employer would have made a decision to dismiss him in the circumstances.
Amarant, there's an awful lot there in the substantive, and we looked at, you know, the bullying harassment. So there was a policy in place. So I suppose that links on then where we talk about, you know, procedures. There is a bullying harassment policy in place. And look, when you look at procedures, you talk about natural justice. Just in analysing and examining the case, what did you find in relation to the fairness and procedures?
Yeah. So again, as you pointed out there, by procedural fairness, two things are looked at. One is the employer's own procedures, and the other then is whether those procedures comply with the rules of natural justice. Now, fair procedures have a lot of elements, but we'll just focus on the one that the adjudicator discussed, I suppose, in most detail, which was that each stage in, whether it's a disciplinary or whether it's a process under the bullying and harassment, that each stage, the investigation, the disciplinary and an appeal, if there is one, it should be carried out by a different individual so that there's no cross-contamination as such, and that each individual comes to it with an impartial viewpoint, and that it obviously renders the process fair. And one individual in particular in this instance, a Mr. X, who was the vice president of the employer, the adjudicator notes that he appeared to have been involved at almost every single stage of this process. He was involved in the initial meeting. He was involved in the disciplinary itself. And he was also involved in the suspension of the employee as well. And he was also involved informally on a number of occasions. So as a result of that, then the adjudicator felt he could not be seen to be independent in his capacity as ultimately the person who made the decision to dismiss. And this rendered the process procedurally unfair. So it fell down on both counts, both the substantive fairness and the procedural fairness.
And I suppose that where it leads in, because one of the things, and like we said at the outset, this was a sizable award. And any award under a UD claim is based on loss of earnings at the date of the hearing. And that sizable award in this instance, I suppose, is not, when you look at, it's resulted as a result of the employee's salary. He was on a significant salary. And we'll talk a moment about the niche sector. But the Employer Act put forward a figure of 219,000, and the complainant put forward a higher figure of 306,000. I think there was a difference relating to the timing of a bonus payment. Ultimately, the adjudicator found the respondent's calculation was to be reasonable and used this as calculating loss. But he still calculated the loss as in excess of the 104 weeks or the 2 year salary, which is the maximum award that is allowable under the UD Acts. But there's a number of things, I suppose, in coming to the final award. The adjudicator noted the employee's attempts to mitigate his loss or to look for other work. And he actually called it out as feeble and therefore reduced the award to 75%. However, that was still €330,000, which is a substantial award by any standards. Now, this is an adjudication decision, so it remains to be seen if this will be appealed. But I certainly think there is a lot of learnings from this, to be fair. And one to note, as we said, look, it's learnings from what has gone on from it. There's a number of different takeaways that I have from this, but I might hand over more. And if there was, you know, just a few different, maybe two or three different things you felt were important that employers should take away from this for learnings, what would they be for you?
Okay, yeah, thanks, Mairead. I think firstly, it's important to have a clear roadmap or a pathway through the process before you embark on it. So one of the issues that arose in this case was that the same individuals were involved. So I think from the outset, you should know exactly who's going to chair each limb of the process before you embark on it, and that those individuals know exactly what they're doing, that they have received training and that they're familiar with their own policy so that they're not then inadvertently breaching their own policy. And secondly, I think following on from that, a paper trail is hugely important so that every meeting is properly documented and minuted and agreed between the parties. And when you find yourself at a third party, you have the necessary paperwork to back up your position.
Absolutely. And I think the other one, just to add to that, to be fair, is about the training side, both on the bullying harassment policy. It's not just one that it's in place, that it's actual factual training, that you don't just hand out the policy. And I think that's important to the entire workforce, so everyone's clearly aware. And we've seen with the new code of practice, there's been new add-ons with the contact person, also about the different approaches that can be taken and the informal approach, etc. That's so important. And we've certainly seen a huge increase. I know certainly from the Training Academy, with looking at bespoke training for companies for their own policy, for your contact person, but also for those conducting investigations or disciplinaries, because ultimately they will be moving on then, that they will actually have to give evidence about what they did and how they made the decisions that they did. So I think that it's a whistle-stop tour on that. There's a lot more we could talk about, but I think, to be fair, for me, that would be my key learnings.
Yeah, thanks, Mairead. And that concludes this episode. Thanks for listening. And for more content like this, be sure to explore the audio hub on ibec.ie and follow IBEC on Twitter at IBEC_IRL. Thank you.